The Sangha is invited to go back to our breathing so that our collective energy of mindfulness will bring us together as an organism, going as a river with no more separation. Let the whole Sangha breathe as one body, be free as one body. Let us transcend the boundaries of a delusive self, liberating from the superiority complex, the inferiority complex, and the equality complex.
So this is our seventh and final day of this 2011, June 2011, 7-day retreat here, silent retreat in Southern Dharma. So here we are. And whatever dramas have unfolded over the last 7 days, whether it went fast or incredibly slow, whether we had successes or failures, whether we had ups and downs, whether we had clarity or confusion, right? Whether we slept well or didn't sleep well, whether the gnats bit us or the gnats didn't bite us. Here we are. Right? And whether we came in first in the race or whether we perceived we came in last in the race, here we are, equals, sitting here in this present moment, free of past, free of future, free of all expectations, at ease and relaxed. What is it, when we look back, what does it all matter? We might say to ourselves, why did it seem to matter so much at the time? So it's good to reflect in this way. So as we move forward, we can move forward knowing that the freedom and spaciousness and ease of this present moment is always available to us. There's nothing that needs to be manufactured, nothing that needs to be made up, nothing that needs to be affirmed, nothing that needs to be denied. Need to let go. As our teacher said, stop grasping at phenomena. Time is a kind of phenomena. Mind states are phenomena. Right. So anyhow, here we are, and I did make a commitment, and I haven't forgotten it. We will finish the story of Shariputra and the goddess today. So this is a question, Alex, I'll talk to you sometime about it. Some more. Okay. So we We can't be distracted today. We are single-minded in our purpose. All right. So if you remember in this ongoing dialogue and encounter between Shariputra and the heavenly goddess, she's been helping him out. Really explain to him about distinctions, especially distinctions between silence and words and writing, about any thought that emancipation is a thing located somewhere in space and time. She also elucidated him very clearly that the Buddha teaches various kinds of teachings based on the capacities of sentient beings. And we know that even when Shariputra praised her and inquired, what is it, what have you seized on that you have such clear understanding? She immediately pulled out the rug of his inquiry and said, I have seized on nothing, seen into nothing, and therefore I speak with eloquence. Then he, again, trying to pin her down, which of the three vehicles do you practice? And she said, I practice all of them. When I'm like this, I'm practicing this vehicle. When I'm like that, I practice that vehicle. When I'm like that, I practice. So, again, all vehicles, all teachings are available to her. She is free in her capacity to use all tools in order to facilitate the conversion, the transformation, the healing of sentient beings. And then the goddess goes on to say, Shariputra, when one enters a grove of champak trees, I don't even know what a champak, C-H-A-M-P-A-K trees, one smells only the odor of the champak and does not smell any other odor. So like in Florida we have jasmines, gardenias that are incredibly fragrant, like blooming jasmine, things like that. When they bloom, the whole yard, the whole house is fragrant. In the same way, when one enters this room, remember this dialogue is taking place in Vimalakirti's bedroom, intimate, that it would be in the bedroom, not even in the living room, in his bedroom. One smells only the fragrance of the Buddha's blessing, but takes no delight in smelling the fragrance of the voice hearers or the pratika Buddha's blessing. So again, here we are, a little bit of the Mahayana putting it to the Hinayanas, a little bit of the Bodhisattva putting it to the pratika Buddhas and the Shravaka Buddhas and the Arhats, etc., etc. Saying that one who's totally embraced the way of loving service, one who is totally selfless in their desire to benefit all being, and one who has given up all distinctions, and one who's totally transcended any attachment to anything, they smell differently. The perfume they give off is differently than those who are still living in the world of distinctions, or still living in the service of self. Shariputra, these Brahmas, Indras, four heavenly kings, heavenly beings, dragon spirits, and others who've entered this room and listened to this great man expound the correct Dharma, all delight in the fragrance of the Buddha's blessing and leave with their minds set on attaining it. And I think we all understand what she's saying, right? That even when we listen to teachings from a great teacher, there is something that permeates us, right? That makes us happy. In other words, it's not the flower, it's the fragrance, the flower. There's something that the flower gives off, like a perfume. That perfume, incense perfumes the atmosphere. It's something intangible. But If you are in a room where incense is burning, even after you leave this room, you may smell it in your clothes. It is permeated, yes. In the same way, the Dharma rain permeates us. It is more than just thoughts and ideas and concepts and beliefs. It suffuses our being. In the same way, she's saying, all delight in the fragrance of Dharma. That's what makes us happy. And then she says, Shariputra, I've been staying in this room for 12 years, and never from the first have I heard any expounding of the Dharma of the voice here or the Pratika Buddhas. I've heard only of the great compassion, great pity of the Bodhisattva, the law of the Buddha that is beyond comprehension. Shariputra, this room constantly manifests 8 rare and unprecedented phenomena. She's saying, in this room, in this dwelling place, in this mind of one who has totally set themselves within the course of this emancipation that is beyond comprehension, at the same time, exactly at the same time, is freely and openly dedicating themselves to the service of beings. Unprecedented phenomena are to be seen. What are these 8? And then she elucidates what these 8 are. This room is constantly flooded with rays of golden light that never change, day or night. It is not lit by the shining of the sun or the moon. This is the first rare and unprecedented phenomenon. What is this light that is not dependent on the sun and the moon? We could say it is the light of awareness. Right. Always shining brightly. It lights up everything and is not dependent on anything. We could also say it's the radiance, the light of the unending compassion and wisdom, not dependent on anything, right? Because the sun, we could say, oh, it's light today, right? But we know that light that we see is dependent on a thing, the sun. In the same way, when we saw the moon last night, we know that the moonlight is dependent on the moon. And of course, if you've studied astronomy, you know that even the moon is dependent on the sun for its light. But these other qualities are not dependent on anything. Once they have been awakened, they just radiate on their own. That is why this awareness is called unborn awareness. Unborn awareness. This is the first and rare Those who enter this room are never troubled by defilements. This is the second rare and unprecedented phenomenon. This is very important to us. There are many people in this retreat, maybe everyone in this retreat, finds themselves. Do you hear what she said? She didn't say those who enter these rooms have no defilements. Right? That's the way we are. We want to come to this room and have no defilements. Right? Those who enter this room are never troubled by defilements. Why? Because they have wisdom. They know that defilements are of the nature of what? Empty, non-solid, unfixed, composites, impermanent, free of any self. That's why yesterday in her talk to Shariputra, she said, you know, to those who aren't arrogant, they can even walk the path of lewdness and stupidity and anger and find liberation there. Right? So please remember that. they are not troubled by their defilements. They turn their wisdom and compassion on their defilements and they see them in what they really are. What are they? Our own wisdom mind. Right? Manifesting in this kind of cockamamie way. That's all. And we see that clearly, so we understand. We handle it appropriately. Right? You come in the room, it's dirty, what do you do? Do you have to be troubled? You have to make a big deal about it? No, you get the broom, you mop, and you clean it up. That's all. What's the big deal? Because you know what? It's just dirt. It's just, underneath that, there's a nice floor. Right? I don't create a drama because there's dirt on the floor. I don't moan. Oh my God, look at, because all we see is the dirt. You can't see beyond the dirt. You can't see, look at this beautiful floor. Right? Just clean the dirt. The dirt too is part of this. We love the earth, don't we? We are part of the earth. Well, earth, that's dirt. There's no getting away from it. Unfortunately, it doesn't always stay out there. Right? It blows in. It's dirt. Right? Like that. Those who enter this room are never troubled by defilements. This is a second rare and unprecedented phenomenon. In this room, Brahmas, Indras, four heavenly kings, and bodhisattvas from other regions constantly come together in a gathering that never ends. This is the third rare and unprecedented. So all these high beings, all these wise beings, all these intelligent, they're always gathering. Right? Coming, conversing, learning from each other. Right? Who wouldn't want to be in this room? Right? It's all available to us. In human form, in book form, in internet form, in internal dialogue form, and right? We need to ask ourselves, who am I conversing with? And what is the quality of my conversation? In this room, there is a constant exposition of the six paramitas and the unregressing wheel of the law, the Dharma. Again. Six paramitas, generosity, diligence, effort, joyful effort, patience. Meditation, wisdom, what is it, right action? Anyhow, all those. The paramitas, the perfections, prajnaparamita, they mean perfection, but they also mean, to the other shore. The things that take us to the other shore. Practicing the paramitas, six paramitas, the Eightfold Path, they take us to the shore of enlightenment, from the shore of confusion. Again, in our life, is our life a constant exposition of the six paramitas? As we observe ourselves during the day, are we practicing that? Right? What are we expounding in our actions to the world? Generosity, You know, generosity means, and I know that Carol probably did her Dana talk today. You know, generosity in the paramita of generosity, there are three types of generosity. First type of generosity is the giving of material, all types of material things to help people, right? Giving medicine to the sick, water to the thirsty, food to the hungry, financial means to people who are poor, etc. Right, all those ways. That's the first kind of giving. Next kind of giving is giving of dharma, and that's obviously considered. We could say one step up, and again, it's that same thing I said earlier. It's that same, you know, give a man a fish, you feed him for a day, teach him how to fish. In the same way, dharma frees people from all their self-induced suffering that's ongoing. Well, most of our helping is more immediate, right? People are in immediate needs, material, kind of material needs. And so we help them and we give them relief and we give them immediate relief from their suffering. But again, the larger context of their lives is not changed. Greed, anger, delusion, we have not given them relief from, have we? So that's what dharma can do. And the third aspect of generosity, dana, paramita, is giving fearlessness, protection, fearlessness. Interesting that that's third. Fearlessness. Not being afraid. Walking in this world in confidence and ease, knowing that whatever you set your heart on, you can accomplish. And knowing that in every moment, everything is okay, whatever happens. Right? As we say, they love you, they hate you. You succeed or you fail. You're good or you're bad. Even if you live or you die, you're not afraid. Why aren't you afraid? Because you understand the nature of things. The impermanent nature of things, the unfixed nature of things, right? The empty nature of things. So what's there to die? Right. And once you have established a home, once you have established a home in your true home, once mindfulness, concentration, insight reveal to you your true mind, your true home, your true awareness, and you take that as your home, that is where you rest and you feel safe, because that can never be taken from you. And that is not disturbed by anything, in the same way that space is not disturbed, even when a tornado or a hurricane, right, comes ripping through and destroys all the forms, right? And we look, and you see the pictures of the devastation, right, after the tornadoes. And yet, if you just look up, you see what? Space is still there. Has not been disturbed at all, has it? Only the forms have been disturbed. In this room, heavenly beings constantly make superlative music, and from their strings come forth the sounds of immeasurable dharma persuasions. This is the fifth and rare unprecedented persuasion. So it's a sweet place, isn't it? It's a sweet place. It's a beautiful place. And all the sounds that are heard are sounds of dharma, the voice of the dharma, the sound of the dharma, is heard in all sounds. So when you hear the dharma, when you know that all sounds, because all sounds are teaching the dharma, how do they teach the dharma? All sounds are what? Empty. unfixed, intangible, impermanent, completely absent of self. So all sounds have the sweet sound of the Dharma. In this room are four great storehouses, stacked high with varied treasure to relieve the destitute and rescue those in want, a supply to be drawn on, yet never exhausted. This is the six rare and unending generosity. When this great man turns his thoughts, this great man is Vimalakirti, Shakyamuni Buddha, Amitabha Buddha, Akshobhaya Buddha, Jeweled Virtue, Jeweled Flame, Jeweled Moon, Jeweled Majesty, Hardness of Paris, Lion, Echo, Prophet and all. Well, remember, these are all the names of the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas, and it goes on. And countless from all the ten directions, when Vimalakirti calls them, they come at once and broadly expound the secret and essential teachings, the storehouse of Dharma. And when they've finished expounding, they return to where they come from. This is the seventh rare and unprecedented. Yeah. When he turns his thoughts to them, we need to ask ourselves, as we think about our day, where am I turning my thoughts? Where am I turning my thoughts during the day? Am I thinking of the illustrious Buddhas? Am I recalling their teachings? When we walk down paths of confusion, paths of judgment, paths of fear, paths of resentment, paths of anger, paths of sadness, paths, you know, all these paths we walk, jealousy, etc. Do we think of the Buddhas, the Bodhisattvas? Do we call them to us? Come. Give me that teaching again. I'm up to some mischief here. I'm about to just create some suffering for myself and others. Do we invite them to our room? Come. Teach me that again. And you see what he says? They immediately come. Right? They come, they give the teaching, and then they go. But he invites them. We need to ask ourselves, what am I inviting into myself all day? Like in the fifth mindfulness training, the transmission this morning, right? What am I putting in? What am I consuming? Not just in terms of foods and toxins, but conversations, readings, movies, relationships. What am I calling to me? Remember in the incense offering, we talked about this, I think, before in this retreat. May we all be companions of Buddhas and Bodhisattvas, right? So you see, Vimalakirti, what does he get when he gets in trouble? Who does he call? Shakyamuni. Come, you know. Amida Buddha, help. Right. See, those are his friends. Those are his companions on the way. He knows they'll give him the best kind of advice. Please think about who you call on to advise you, to support you, to nourish you, right, to show you the right way to live in this life, the right way to be in this situation. Within this room, magnificently adorned palaces of all the heavenly beings and the pure lands of all the various Buddhas are all to be seen. This is the eighth rare. So you get it. It's a lovely place to dwell. And all kinds of miraculous, wonderful things happen. In Vimalakirti's bedroom. It only has a bed. Remember, all the furniture was taken out. You might say, how can such miraculous things happen? Because of Vimalakirti. He's in the room. If you think it's about the room, you miss the point of this. It's because of Vimalakirti. Something going on? Oh, okay. You're hungry and you want to get something to eat. You're missing a good part, but we'll... So then... All right. So again... These are the eight rare and unprecedented phenomena, Shariputra, who, seeing these sights beyond belief, would still delight in the law of the voice hearer. Right? He's trying to bring them out. And Shariputra, who is never remiss in missing the point, right? And just kind of, we know people like that. They're in their heads. You know what I mean? And just. It's like da 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 da, and then they say something and go, you realize they're just in their heads. You know what I mean? Like they got their own agenda that they're working on and almost has not. So here she's given this incredible exposition right on these eight. I mean, most of us are just going, you know, we're just so exalted. Shariputra then says to the goddess, why don't you change out of this female body of yours? You know, you got to wonder about him. But he's there's something very sweet about him because he means well. You know, he means well. And he, you know, it's like with the chairs and, the, you know, he right? He means well. He just doesn't get it. He's just caught up in what? Distinctions. We have to admit, he's like us in many ways. Okay? So obviously, I mean, what's going on? Remember, you know, and again, as I said earlier, we have to understand the social, cultural of this time. Obviously, these were patriarchal times. But more than that, you know, one of the reasons, obviously, that a woman would, believe in a rebirth, would say, you know, may I be reborn a man in my next lifetime, is why? Because being a woman was not easy in those days, right? You were the property of your father until you became the property of your husband. Your life was, you know, men could go off and go here and go there. Women, you know what I mean? So, you could see it'd be very natural. This was not a time of social change and liberation and people. It was, you know, there was none of that. Very strict society. So. So Shariputra, you know, he's probably going there, wow. I mean, this woman is something else. Now, if she only had the form of a man, you know, that, you know what I mean? Then she could, you see, he's like, he's in the world of distinctions. He just can't, but again, I have a soft spot for him. I think he means well. Don't take him the wrong way. And you'll see what she does. I mean, she's always just, about to say not three steps, she's about 300 steps ahead of him. So Sariputra, after she gives this great exposition on the loftiness of the phenomena that go on in Vimalakirti's room, says to her, why don't you change out of this female form that you're in? And she says, Shariputra. She's so patient. What is there to change? If a sorcerer were to conjure up a phantom woman and then someone asked her why she didn't change out of her female body, would that be any kind of reasonable question? And Shariputra says, no. Phantoms have no fixed form, so what would be there? What would there be to change? Right. Remember? This body. I mean, remember we got that teaching? Remember that? How do we regard living beings? First thing was said what? Like a conjurer is conjured up, you know. That's all. It arises because of causes and conditions. It is not fixed, impermanent, empty, etc. And that's all it is. Right? You know, so what are you so hung up about, Shariputra, about forms? And again, when he says, when, but you see how she doesn't put him down. This is really the Dharma way, which is a Socratic method. Always ask questions, right? So, you know, what do you think? I mean, you know, if a conjurer created this phantom woman, you know, would she have to change out of it? Well, no. Right? Why? Because she didn't create the female form, did she, either? The conjurer did it, according to causes and conditions, right? Phantoms have no fixed form, he says, so what would there be to change? The goddess then said to him, all things are just the same. They have no fixed form. So why ask why I don't change out of my female form? Just a form. It's not fixed. There's no such thing as a woman in any fixed way. That is right. That's a label that is put on something. Right? Just the same way, you know, the flower doesn't call itself a flower, the hand doesn't call itself the hand, and women and men don't call themselves that. It's something that is they are called. Right? And the man's body grows in a certain way, the woman's body grows in a certain way, according to causes and conditions. And that is just the way it is. It's not bad or good, right or wrong, not even male or female, they just are what they are. In the same way, by the way, there may be many people here who, when they observe themselves, say, I'd like to have another form. I don't want to be me. Right. Right. Shariputra might have asked some of you, well, if you don't like your form, why don't you get out of it? And we might have said, well, I'm really trying. But the goddess didn't say that. She has wisdom. She said, what are you talking about? None of this is solid. None of this is permanent. None of this is real. None of this is fixed. This is, you know, I am the way I am because of causes and conditions. Right? What is there to get out of? Well, she's a goddess. So it obviously implies that she has powers. So again, after having entered this dialogue, she's really going to teach him something. At that time, the goddess employed her supernatural powers to change Shariputra into a goddess like herself. Now, if there's any ultimate experience that a celibate monk would probably... you know, that would be on the highest list of no-nos. You know, this is not like even dressing up like a woman. Putting on woman's clothes. He's actually become a woman. And she takes on Shariputra's form just for fun. But she probably wanted to see what? What's it like being in this guy? Right? And then... in the form of Shariputra, she looks across at him and says, why don't you change out of this female body? See how wonderful she's really helping him. Now again, I think again, this is very profound, because not only do we have this thing with ourselves, you know, but what? We do it with everybody else. Right? We don't like the way they are, right? We want them to change. We want them to be different, right? It's like we go around the room and go, why don't you change out of your form? Why don't you change out of your form? You know what I mean? We want everybody to change and be just the way we want them to be, right? So it's interesting. In a certain way, we really have to say, this is really the way of compassion, right? To step into another's body. When you step into another's body, you know what? They can't help being who they are. So it's just, you know, beside the deep Dharma teaching here, it's also, I think, a very profound everyday teaching, which is like, you know, it's like, oh, you'd like me to change? All right. I'll give you totally who I am. You step in here. Let's see what you do with it. And all of a sudden, what? Can't do anything because I'm you. Okay. So then she looks across at him and says, okay, big guy, why don't you change out of this female body? Shariputra, now in the form of a goddess, replied, I don't know why I've suddenly changed and taken on a female body. He's kind of lost. I mean, he's kind of probably quite freaked out. I mean, again, great drama, right? Somebody could turn this into a play or a movie. I mean, it's like... And the goddess says, Shariputra, if you can change out of this female body, then all women can change likewise. Shariputra, who is not a woman, appears in a woman's body. This is really wonderful. So what she's saying is, like Shariputra, in a woman's body, is still Shariputra. Right? She's trying to show him it's just a body. Right? Right? It's because like Shariputra's looking down, but inside he's still Shariputra. He's, you know, who is not a, Shariputra, who is not a woman, appears in a woman's body. And the same is true of all women. Although they appear in woman's body, they are not women. Therefore, the Buddha teaches that all phenomena are neither male nor female. So you can see how revolutionary this teaching is. You know, if you can see at the time, you know, monks and nuns and, you know, monks are higher than nuns, right? And monks and nuns are higher than lay women and laymen. You know, and you can see it's such a distinction. And you know, men are intrinsically better than women. You know what I mean? The whole and they go, in the midst of all this, they say what? All phenomena, male, female, all these distinctions. This is not what the Buddha teaches. So it's, we don't have the history to know, you know, at the time the way these teachings socially, you know. But obviously something like this is very runs counter to the norms of the time. But again, even beyond that, it is telling us, you know, again, don't get caught up on distinctions. Don't get caught up on labels, right? Male, female, Republican, Democrat. Right? All that. People are more than their labels, aren't they? Friend, enemy. Then the goddess withdrew her supernatural powers and Shariputra returned to his original form. And the goddess said to Shariputra, where now is the form and shape of your female body? Shariputra said, the form and shape of my female body does not exist, yet does not not exist. The light's going. Things, because he's just had a very real kind of supernatural experience, right? He realized he could still have all his tendencies and all his ideas, but exist in a totally different form. And then go back to the other form. Interesting. He sees forms do exist, but they're not solid, they're not permanent. One can go in and out of them. In the same way, water can flow. Fast, smooth, it can get very narrow and tight, it can get very wide and expansive. It can fit into a little container like this, it can fit into a container like this, it can fit into all those containers, right? It can take all different kinds of forms according to causes and conditions, and yet it's not fixed. And yet it's still water. Right. So we, yes, this appears to be 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, octagonal, 8-sided. This is oval. And yet I could pour this into that and the tea would become octagonally shaped. It can take on the form, but it's not fixed. Nothing is fixed. Again, our mind may take on, the form of happiness. It may take on the form of anger. It may take on the form of youth. It may take on the form of middle age. It may take on the form of old age. It may take on the form of birth. It may take on the form of death. And on and on and on. It does appear that way, doesn't it? Yet nothing is fixed. And the goddess says, yes, all things are just like that. They do not exist, yet do not exist. Okay? Form is emptiness, emptiness is form. It's again, Buddhism does not negate the relative world. Buddhism does not negate the sense domain. It says, yes, things appear a certain way. They appear the same way a phantom appears. Right? But yet when one looks deeply at it, when one perceives it's a phantom, one knows that it's what? Not solid, not fixed, not real in any self-existent way. Right? That's all. That's why you have these kind of strange statements like things don't exist and yet they do not exist. We're trying in language to teach something that is not apparent. So there's a lot of negation. So we don't cling to words. So that is why you have in the Heart Sutra the entire corpus of the Buddha's teaching negated. You have the entire, anything that we think we are, form, feeling, the five skandhas, the 18 senses and sense fields and sense domain, it's all, no, none of it. Everything that you have learned about anything is not fixed, is not solid, is not real, is not self-existent, doesn't have, it just appears briefly. Right? Like I say, five skandhas. It's gone. I look into the skandha of form. And as soon as I stop looking, it's gone. I look into the skandha of consciousness, anything, thought. It's gone. There's nothing to hold on to, which is good. It's a lot of work holding on. Give it up. All right. All things are just like that. They do not exist, yet do not exist. And that they do not exist, yet do not exist, is exactly what the Buddha teaches. If this is not yet clear to you, remember that? It's So come back to this, buy your own copy and meditate on this one. Sariputta then said to the goddess, he's so practical, when your present existence comes to the end, where will you be reborn? I mean, he just doesn't stop. You know, there are people like that. They just have the, you know, they always have another question. It's like, I mean, you know, it's like, isn't enough enough? You know, I mean, you've just been in this vast assemblage, 32, you know, they're up there in their lion thrones. I mean, you know, people are changing shapes. You know, the teaching beyond comprehension has been elucidated. Vimalakirti and Manjushri have this, you know what I mean? You just encountered this goddess, the flower scene. You know, you just changed bodies. You just had the supernatural experience. And you're still like, you know, and by the way, you know, after this, where are you going? Please check your own mind. We're like that too. You know, when is enough enough just to be quiet and enough, right? So, Sariputta asked the goddess. So, when your present existence comes to an end, where will you reborn? And the goddess replied, "The way the Buddha is born in his transformation body, that is how I'll be born." Now, again, I'm not going to go into this. But everybody, of course, knows the Buddha has three bodies. He has the Dharmakaya, Sambhogakaya, and Nirmanakaya. He has three bodies. He has the Dharma body, which is the unconditioned body. He has a Sambhogakaya, which is the body, the radiant body, the clarity body, the body that has all the marks of all the high qualities. And then he has his transformation body, which is kind of his physical, historical body, the way he appears in the world, the way we see him. Ordinary people see the Buddha looking like that, right? He looks like a monk. He's got his little special hairdo. He wears a robe, right? We think that's the Buddha. That's what's called his transformation. That's what he transforms in, because in those days, to look like an ascetic was respected. So the Buddha took on that role because he knew that is the role that people would pay attention to him. Right? Like that. But the Buddhas can take on any kind of a transformation body. So she's saying, just like the Buddha, in my next lifetime, I'll take on a body. You know, I'll be reborn where everyone will benefit people. And that's it. Right? The Buddha just appears where he can be of help. And Sariputta said, when the Buddha is born in a transformation body, it is not a matter of birth and death. And the goddess said, it's that way with living beings too. They are without birth and death. I mean, she's just wonderful, isn't she? You know, again, you know, he thinks enlightenment is a thing and that those who have it have something special, right? So like Buddhas are beyond birth and death. But she says, no. Even though they don't know it, sentient beings are beyond birth and death. They are not really born and die in their true self, right? So he's still caught in duality. Hear the duality between Buddhas and sentient beings. Sariputta said to the goddess, how long will it be before you attain Anuttara Samyak Sambodhi, which means perfect, complete, absolute enlightenment. That's like the highest of the high. The goddess replied, Sariputra, when you revert to the state of a common, unenlightened mortal, then I will succeed in gaining Anuttara Samyak Sambodhi. Right? Sariputra says, it is unthinkable that I should become a common mortal again. Because again, he's an arhat, he's a disciple. He has renounced all worldly life, so he says, you know, unthinkable that I would ever regress to, you know, the state of an ignorant, ordinary sentient being. The goddess said, it is likewise unthinkable that I should attain Anuttara Samyak Sambodhi. Why? Because Bodhi is this enlightened mind, is nothing to be thought about, hence nothing to be attained. So beautiful. Right. Sariputra said, the Buddhas who are now attaining Anuttara Samyak Sambodhi and those who have attained it in the past and will attain in the future, numerous as sands in the Ganges, What would you say of all those? So he's, you know, he's still pushing it, but he's saying, you know, hold on a second. I mean, you know, we talk about all these Buddhas who have, of the past, and you know, who've attained great enlightenment. I mean, what do you mean? There's nothing to attain. Haven't they attained it? And she says, Sariputra, we use the numbers of everyday language. Right? That's all we're doing. We're using everyday language, and so we speak of all those as belonging to the three existences of past, present, and future. Remember? Yeah. We may use words, right? Charlie, Nancy. We may use words to distinguish male, female. We use words to distinguish. We talk about yesterday, we talk about today, we talk about tomorrow. Right? But that doesn't mean that that's an accurate description of what we're really perceiving. We use numbers of everyday language, and so we speak of all those as belonging to the three existences of past, present, and future. But this is not to say that Bodhi, awakened mind, knows anything of past, present, and future. So we may speak in this conditioned realm of things of past, present, and future, but awakened mind, awakened, knows nothing of time, knows nothing of space. Timeless, endless, boundless, beyond birth and death. And yet, you know, because we do not live alone, right? Because we live with other people, because language has been developed, you know, we talk about things. And that is often useful. Concepts can be useful. Remember? The goddess said to Shariputra, don't be afraid of words. Words too are emptiness in their nature. So we can use words to describe things, but that doesn't mean... because again, we could say... So you may not, you remember like 5 minutes ago, right? And now, and 5 minutes from now, I mean, we can say all those things, can't we? And yet, the experience of this has nothing to do with time, does it? This is just this. Then the goddess said, Shariputra, have you attained the way of the Arhat? Shariputra said, He seems to be catching on. Shariputra said, I've realized there is nothing to be attained, so I've attained it. So even though he may say, because of certain descriptive qualities, perhaps, to of him, he might say, or he's had certain insights, or certain ways in the way he is, he may say, according to a conventional way of looking at things, right? I guess you could call me an arhat. But I know that none of these things are intrinsically real, solid, permanent. So I really haven't attained anything. But we can say I've attained it. Right? Like that. And the goddess said, the Buddhas and the Bodhisattvas are that way too. They realize there's nothing to attain, and so they've attained it. How does that manifest practically? Don't be attached to outcome and don't think you're a big shot. You might have done a great job polishing the floor, but the truth is, the floor just polished itself. Just the body. Polishing. Don't claim it as yours. The truth is, you didn't do it. Your body did it. A body did it. Body did it. Like that. The self claims it for itself. Look what I did. You didn't do anything. The body did it. Right? So many things that we think we've done, we haven't done. It just happened. Things come through us, things come out of us, qualities, competencies that probably were given to us by our ancestors, who we just maybe honed a little bit in this life. You know, and yet we look at me. I've attained this, I've attained that. It's not like that. The Buddhas and Bodhisattvas are that way too. They've realized there is nothing to attain, and so they've attained it. Right? Yeah, if you want to say I did a good job, fine. But I know. There's no I. And even to say good job doesn't mean anything. Who needs it, right? But thank you anyhow. At that time, Vimalakirti said to Sariputra, This goddess has in the past made offerings to 92 million Buddhas. Interesting. Could have said 9 million and we would have been impressed. Could have said 9,000. Right? Why 92 million? Why not 91 million? Could it be that he actually knew? And had the exact count? We have to wonder about these things. The bottom line is what? For those of you who are discouraged that you haven't achieved enlightenment in this retreat, for those of you who are discouraged that your practice is not, your meditation practice, your mindfulness has not been perfect, right? Your realization has not, lit up the hall. Is there anybody here who can say that they have made offerings in the past to 92 million Buddhas? Is there anybody here who can say they've even made offerings to one Buddha, maybe to one Buddha? Please be humble in your practice. Takes times. In Buddhism, it says it takes lifetimes. The Buddha himself elucidated hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of lives, of which he said these were only a few. And lives not only in human form, lives in animal form, all kinds of forms he took. Who knows what these birds are up to? Look at them, right? So diligently, selflessly working for what? For new life. For new life that will leave them, that will one day fly away. Right? And yet look how hard they work, right? To find a safe place. They're all over the place finding the right sticks, the right ground. Right? You know, are they, if it was us, we'd be, you know, kind of, I hope they're noticing how hard I'm working, come nobody's, you know, bringing me some water, a little bird seed or something. Right? That'd be us, right? Look at them. Selfless, those birds. Right? And then that mother, and maybe even the father bird, will just sit on those, right? Those eggs. And then when they hatch, they'll be incredibly diligent and bringing them food, feeding them, and they'll protect them. They might even give up their own life to protect their child. their babies, right? They'll take on bigger birds and even bigger animals, right? Selfless. And then at the end, what? The babies will fly away. And the nest will be destroyed. Are they going to bitch and moan? And they're just birds, my friends, with little bird brains. And they understand, don't they? So we can learn a lot from our two-legged, four-legged, and our winged, and our legless friends. We can learn a lot from them about the Dharma, about the way things are. So Vimalakirti says to Shariputra. So again, we understand that Vimalakirti has been listening the whole time to this interchange, but he hasn't interfered, which is good. He doesn't need to be in everything, does he? I'll let the goddess. This is her show. We don't have to. We don't have to be in every show, do we? This is the goddess's show. He just observed. But at the end, he says to Shariputra, "This goddess has in the past made offerings to 92 million Buddhas and can disport herself with the supernatural powers of a bodhisattva. She has fulfilled all that she vowed, has accepted the truth of birthlessness, and dwells in a state from which she will never regress. Because of her original vow." Do you know what her original vow was? "May I become enlightened for the benefit of all beings." That was her original vow. This is the same vow we make. So please understand, this goddess is just us. She's making the same vows that we make. And she's just been diligently going about her practice under 92 million Buddhas. And we know each Buddha is in charge of a world cycle, and most world cycles last at least 2,500 years. So anybody want to do the 92 million times 2,500? How many people here can say they've been practicing that long? "She has fulfilled all that she vowed, has accepted the truth of birthlessness, and dwells in a state from which she will never regress. Because of her original vow, she can show herself anytime she wishes and teach and convert living beings." So this ends chapter 7. So in this retreat we have completed chapter 6 and chapter 7. Chapter 6 was beyond comprehension, and chapter 7 was regarding living beings. There are 14 chapters altogether. Anyhow, so we shall see what the future brings.
Job security.
Yeah. And then we can always just begin again at the beginning. There are many more wonderful sutras and teachings of the Buddha. So this concludes our teaching for this retreat cycle on Vimalakirti. We've had a wonderful time, haven't we? Being in the presence of such wise, such intelligent, such clever, such compassionate beings. And so we thank them for their teachings, and we thank all those who have preserved these teachings for thousands of years. We thank the people, Burton Watson, who translated it, because again, if it was in Chinese, I don't know if I know I couldn't make sense of it. I don't know if anybody else could, so we have to be grateful. to the translators, etc. We have to be Columbia University Press, you know, so on and on and on. We are grateful. So this concludes the Dharma talks for this retreat. Why don't we take a short break and then come together in closing circle.